Historians and storytellers love to journey back in time.
November 1963, Kennedy's last days, the arrival in Texas.
JFK, Jackie. Only one agent reacted to the gunfire. Do you see the rifle coming out of that window, or do you see Kennedy's head being blown apart?
I mean you. Hey, pal, don't despair. You want to shoot a president? Come on and shoot a president.
A chilling monologue there from actor John Malkovich in the movie In the Line of Fire about a Secret Service agent who failed to save a president 50 years ago. And a tune from the dark and jaunty Stephen Sondheim musical Assassins about America's culture of single gunmen and women down through history. In recognition of the 50th anniversary of the assassination, KERA's culture producer and longtime film critic Jerome Weeks has been chronicling how the Kennedy assassination lives on in pop culture. Landmarks of downtown Dallas, historical icons, like Parkland, a movie out this year with a name that barely requires an explanation, even today.
Parkland Hospital is where Kennedy was rushed after he was shot in Dealey Plaza. And Peter Landsman, the writer-director of the film, concentrates on a number of characters, including Abraham Zapruder of the famous film, and the surgeons in the Parkland Hospital. So we see the Kennedy assassination. We don't actually see it directly. We see its effects on the people around it.
Right now, there are people out there that are ready to start a war. Now, the film in that camera is the only way we have to know what happened out here today. You understand that? It's a matter of national security.
I need to think.
Sir, I'm no longer asking.
Billy Bob Thornton there attempting to get the Zapruder film, right?
From Paul Giamatti playing
exactly.
For Zapruder. Yes.
Now, is this a take-us-back-in-time kind of look at the Kennedy assassination, or is this fantasy, more in the spirit of Oliver Stone, who we'll talk about in a moment?
No, it's quite the first. It is significant because it completely ignores conspiracy theories. And I think it's a very smart film in the way it concentrates on people like that they often don't know, like Lee Harvey Oswald's brother and his mother, for instance, and the Parkland surgeons, who, after they are stunned by having the president die there, then have to deal with Lee Harvey Oswald that same weekend. And so it's when it comes rushing back at them again, you can just see the weariness and the shock.
And of course, the opposite approach from Parkland is a movie like JFK, or I referred to a moment ago, Oliver Stone's movie, which is all about conspiracy, came out in the early 90s. Let's hear a very memorable clip. Here's actor Donald Sutherland.
Oswald, Ruby, Cuba, the mafia. Keeps them guessing like some kind of parlor game, prevents them from asking the most important question, why? Why was Kennedy killed? Who benefited? Who has the power to cover it up?
In many ways, the Kennedy conspiracy theories and Oliver Stone were a marriage, a Hollywood marriage made in heaven.
Or hell, if you sit through the director's cut. It's a long, talky film. In some ways, it's kind of a last gasp, I think, a throwback to that kind of mindset that it's all connected, that there is some ominous force drawing all these people together and causing this.
Less a piece of art and more maybe an argument with history itself. The musical Assassins by Stephen Sondheim is a much broader look at this whole notion of gun culture, assassins, and what you can do to make yourself a person of history. Here's a clip from Sondheim's Assassins.
Why do these rednecks always have three names? James Earl Ray, John Wilkes Booth, Lee Harvey Oswald.
And now the motorcade is turning onto Elm Street. There's someone holding up a banner, all the way with JFK.
What do you think the mission of Assassins is, and how does it much more broadly evoke the America affected by the Kennedy assassination?
Well, John, I spoke with John Weidman, who wrote that with Stephen Sondheim, and he said that the original intent was to write something on John Wilkes Booth or Lee Harvey Oswald. But the more they thought about it, the more they got the sense of this kind of overwhelming pattern in American history. Four presidential assassinations successful in a century, plus a half dozen other failures. And so he wanted to find out, what is it in America that leads people to do this? And the argument of assassins is that, in effect, it's the failure of the American dream. A lot of the assassins, they don't have really articulated politics. Rather, they have a sense of resentment, a sense of something's failed, I'm owed attention.
You know, as I'm thinking about art and the Kennedy assassination, there's so much of the media iconography from the funeral and from that day that has ended up on T-shirts. There's a very famous Oswald image of being shot by Jack Ruby that John Jr. salute. All those are images kind of out of context and are pieces of American art on their own.
It's often said that Vietnam was the first TV war. Well, this was our first TV presidential funeral, our first live assassination. Jack Ruby shooting Oswald was live on American television. So those images were shocking even then. Also, the fact that the crucial frame in Zapruder's film was withheld for so long made that film even more a kind of lost treasure. And then when it was finally revealed, when people actually saw it in ABC News in the early 70s, it was a shocker. Because people may have read conspiracy books like Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment, but that's only, you know, a couple hundred thousand. Millions saw the Zapruder film for the first time on ABC.
Speaking of books, Don DeLillo's Libra is an attempt to really cast all of this iconography. There's an amazing portrait of Marguerite, who is the mother of Lee Harvey Oswald, and their original upbringing and their very curious relationship.
I think it is one of the great pieces of art that has come out of this entire ferment over the assassination. It portrays Lee Harvey Oswald as this alienated, brutalized character. And you actually feel some degree of sympathy for him, partly because his mother is such a monster.
Finally, we're going to end with a clip from a movie, Winter Kills, which really reminds us that the Kennedy assassination is inseparable from the paranoia of the Cold War and all of the McCarthyist paranoia that preceded that Kennedy assassination. Here, listen.
What's your full name?
Arthur Jokers Fletcher.
We will hear your testimony.
I shot President Keegan.
Of course, President Keegan, imaginary character, but all of this very reminiscent of the Cold War, almost a Manchurian candidate kind of tone there. Where does this come from?
Well, Richard Condon wrote both Winter Kills and The Manchurian Candidate. And although the assassination sparked a great deal of the paranoid conspiracy thinking in America, people forget that The Manchurian Candidate came out before the president was assassinated. So there was, because of the Cold War, there was a fear. Generally, it was a right-wing fear of a communist infiltration. And that's really what's behind Manchurian Candidate. But with the JFK assassination and with other things that happened in the 60s, the government deceits over FBI investigations, over the Vietnam War, over civil rights, it became a more left-wing obsession. And so Winter Kills, in a way, sort of flip-flops Condon's earlier thinking in Manchurian Candidate.
Settling down, all of this artistic referencing of the Kennedy assassination, or just flaring up one last time for the 50th?
I spoke to an SMU literature professor recently about this, and he had a very interesting idea. He thinks it won't die until the baby boomers die off, because they still have that vivid memory.
They, meaning us, right, Jerome?
Exactly.
Jerome Weeks is Art and Seek producer and reporter at KERA in Dallas. Jerome, thanks so much.
Enjoyed it.
Your memories are adding to the conversation here at The Takeaway. Pat in Nyack, New York writes, I was 12 years old when President Kennedy was shot. I was out on the steps of my elementary school clapping erasers when a man came up the steps and said, go inside. The president has been shot. That moment continues to define my life until this day. Share your story at 877-8MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry in Dallas. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.